hey, this is Matt, and I'm really feeling a hot dog right now, so I'm going to go up to North Center and eat a hot dog and listen to Outside the Loop Radio, Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine.
Thank you very much, Matt. It's that time of year. Yep, I hear the holiday bells ringing. And you're getting a hot dog to boot. So there it is. Welcome to Outside the Loop. Yes, this is Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine. I am Mike Steven. It is wonderful to be here with you today for show number 1001. And what we do here on the program is take a look at local issues and topics that don't always get mainstream media attention. And you can go to the website, subscribe to the podcast, get the 1000th show that came out last week, live from Fitzgerald's. Still riding high off of that one. It was a lot of fun, and I think you will dig that. And hey, look, it is the holiday season. This is the last time I will talk to you before Christmas Day. So happy holidays, happy Hanukkah, happy Kwanzaa, Festivus. I don't know, whatever you're celebrating, it's all good. I hope you have a wonderful holiday season and a great holiday week coming up here. And, you know, we were in the holiday mode, my family and I, my wife Jenny, my boys Mikey and Joey, who are 10 and 8. And last week we went to the Chicago Symphony and we watched the CSO perform the soundtrack to the Christmas classic Home Alone. And we had a great time. It was just absolutely phenomenal to experience the Chicago Symphony Orchestra doing this score by John Williams, not that John Williams on WGN Radio, but John Williams of Star Wars fame. I did not know, after all these years, I did not know that John Williams did the score for Home Alone. But here we are. It was fantastic. And I was talking to my wife about this. You know, if Home Alone takes place in 2025, it just couldn't happen. I mean, you have cell phones, right? Everyone's got a cell phone or some sort of watch. So if little Kevin McAllister was left home alone, he would probably know to, even if his phones were dead, the landlines were dead, there would be some way of communicating through his iPad, like a FaceTime thing, or his tablet. Kids do that all the time today. And of course, the policing probably wouldn't be as bad when they call Chicago from Paris and the cops, they don't really care too much. I don't know. I'm not trying to be a Scrooge. I was just looking at that. I'm like, I don't know. Did this movie age well? I guess it did because we're still going to see it. We're still going to see the CSO perform the soundtrack to it. So maybe you're watching Home Alone this weekend. You should. It's still a good flick. Or maybe you're watching another Christmas classic like Die Hard. In any case, I hope you have a great holiday week. And we've got a great show coming up for you today. We'll talk about Chicago's creative community. Also, what was it like to grow up in Skokie in the 1960s and 70s and then get set free and run loose in the city of Chicago? We will talk to someone who wrote a book about that. He's got some pretty amazing stories. What was it like coming of age in the 1960s in Skokie, Illinois? Well, Al Crocky knows something about this, and he tells us the story, or more like a series of stories, in his new book called Straight Outta Skokie, The Crocky Chronicles 1968. In this memoir, he shares stories from his youth, yes, growing up in Skokie, but his life story extends beyond that border, too. We could check out the website straightoutaskokie.com, and Al Crocky is here with us today on Outside the Loop. Al, nice to talk to you. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you got it. So, okay, this book here is actually going to be eventually a three-part series, and this edition of it, Straight Outta Skokie, The Crocky Chronicles 1968, came out in October. So let me ask you this to start here. Why did you want to write this story of these kind of eras of your life coming of age here?
Well, for a long time, I've been a storyteller to friends and family, and everybody's saying, you know, you should write that story down. You should write that story down. And then COVID rolled around, okay, and I was always saying, oh, I need to write these stories down. COVID came around, and I was living in a high rise in Chicago, and kind of isolated. And the best part of my day was going downstairs to get the mail or throw the garbage out. So I started writing, and what I did at first is I made an outline, and after I made the outline, I said, am I going to fit all these stories in one book? So then I separated it by the years. So this first book that just came out is 1968. The second edition will be 1969. And the third one will be 70 through 74 when I had my record store in Skokie.
Yeah. So, I mean, you have a lot of stories in here. You've lived and continue to live a life. There's a lot going on. And so, all right, when you were coming of age in Skokie, Illinois, in the 1960s. Paint a picture for us. What was Skokie like back then from your perspective?
Well, Skokie in a way back then was kind of a bubble, okay, because we were in this, you know, it was a great time to grow up. It was the 50s and 60s growing up. It was a lot easier. Mm-hmm. And it was, I was surrounded by so many kids grew up there. And as a young kid, you know, we grew up like a lot of suburban kids. We got up in the morning. I did a paper route. We went and played baseball or some kind of sport all day. And as we got older, we started going to dances and hanging out in bowling alleys, pool halls, Old Orchard Shopping Center, taking the L down to Wrigley or Sox Park, going downtown to see a movie at all the great Chicago movie palaces. You know, it was great. Growing up there was just great. And, you know, back then, people left their doors open. We lived in a four-unit apartment building. Mm-hmm. And the neighbors, if your mom wasn't home, the neighbor made you lunch. And it was just, that's just the way it was growing up.
Sure,
there.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, kind of that idyllic, you know, story that, you know, you kind of paint there. And why I think that's kind of part of this is, you know, you talk about, I mean, early in the book here, you're kind of in the social experiences at the time and what's going on with current events like in 1960. And I know early on you talk about how you're riding around and you're in Chicago and you're thinking, what's going on here? And you kind of, you're in the thick of the response to the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr. So that's early in the story, isn't it?
Yes, it was. In fact, it's the beginning of the story. I had gone to work I was working at Wrigley Field selling souvenirs, and on the way down we took the Skokie Swift to the Howard L, and on the way down to Wrigley, we ran into two gals we met. Me and my buddy, we were taking the L. And we made a date for that night. And then another couple came with us and we went downtown and back, you know, I was like the last guy in my group to start smoking pot. So we're downtown, we're smoking, we're at that park, uh-huh. Right by Northwestern Hospital.
Yeah.
And I'm in Chicago by the water tower there. Anyhow, we get in the car and we say, what do you want to do? Let's go get some pizza. So we decide to go get pizza. We end up on Division Street, and we're going past Cabrini, and we see women holding each other and crying, and all of a sudden, somebody throws a stone at the car, get out of here, you know, and then all of a sudden, there's a guy on top of the car beating his umbrella. It was in response to Martin Luther King.
Wow.
And we got out of there, and it was just a crazy day. And coincidentally, the Electric Theater at Kinetic Playground had opened the day before for the first time. They just opened that weekend. And so someone had told me about it. So we ended up there that night. And then that became a staple in my life, going to the Electric Theater at Kinetic Playground to hear music.
Right. Well, that the Kinetic Playground, I mean, that was a historic venue. I mean, so many amazing bands came through there. I think Zeppelin was there at one time when they were.
I was at that Zeppelin show.
You were at the Zeppelin show at the Kinetic Playground?
Yeah.
What was that like?
It was Zeppelin, Jethro Tull, and I think, I can't think of the third band, but it was unbelievable. It was just unbelievable. Every weekend was a show like that. I mean, one weekend was Van Morrison with Jeff Beck, just great, great shows. And in addition to the Electric Theater, which became called the Kinetic Playground, the year after, which will be in the second book, a small coffee house opened called Alice's Revisited. And a lot of the Chicago bands started coming through there as the blues, especially guys like Howlin' Wolf or Muddy Waters. Mm-hmm. We saw them all there. I mean, we'd go to Alice's and be able to talk to Muddy Waters. With a Quiet Night, the same thing.
Wow, that is incredible. I mean, I think it's really interesting how you talk about Skokie as this sort of idyllic, neighborhood growing up there and this childhood where everyone's leaving their doors open. And as you get older, I mean, you're getting into the thick of not always very polished Chicago, shall we say. I mean, there's a lot of issues and you kind of confront that, if it's meeting certain characters or just meeting people on the street. But I think why I like that is that's real Chicago. I mean, that's where people that we call Chicagoans, that's it, man. Like, that's their experience. What's going on? It's raw. It's unvarnished. And that's the Chicago experience,
Yeah. Yeah. And that same year we had the Democratic Convention, and there was a newspaper back then called The Seed, which was kind of the underground newspaper. I heard your show on The Reader, and this was before The Reader, the Chicago Seed.
Mm.
And it was right above Alice's Revisited. And, and we were worried about the draft. We had Vietnam going on that year, okay? And we're all worried about the draft. Going to Vietnam, which was not a popular war, which a lot of protesting and stuff like that. And when the Democratic Convention came, there was, protests in the park, which turned into somewhat of a riot. And these were things that were going on back then.
Now, is it true that, speaking of Vietnam, later on, I think you might talk about this in a later edition of this series here, but you tried to, you didn't want to go to war. So No. You were trying to evade that draft a little bit.
So back then they had what's called a college deferment. Mm. Okay. And in order to get a college deferment, you had to go to college. And if you went to college, you didn't have to go into the Army. You could avoid the draft. The problem was I wasn't a great student, and I was always working. And at first I had entered a junior college downtown called Central Y Junior College. And then at the end of the story, it talks about how I met some guy that was going to the Midwestern Broadcasting School, which is, the second edition starts out where I'm going to the Midwestern Broadcasting School. And back then, when you graduated, you got an FCC license, and you had to have an FCC license back then to be on the radio. And I ended up with this will be in the next book, and I ended up with a small radio show, which eventually became Triad after I left it, after I got fired.
Well, you're a brother in sound, man. You know what it's like to be on the radio. I love that.
We were on from 12 to 4 in the morning. It was called Crash. Whether you're crashing or hashing, tripping or sipping, you're going to dig the blues of Mr. B.B. King, and I'll be back in a moment after this commercial message.
Look at that. You still have the chops, man. You still got it. I love that. I love that. I love old school radio like that. And, man, you had a lot more freedom, back then. You could really get weird with it,
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's amazing the stories that you tell here, and it just seems like it's one of these kind of stories where you just happen to be in the right place at the right time. And yes, That's incredible. Like you were hanging out with Cynthia Plastercaster. Now, for the listeners, if you don't know who that is, Google Cynthia Plastercaster, but don't do it on a work computer. Be safe about it. Just trust me on that. You were hanging out with her. She invited you to the cemetery?
Well, what happened was I ran into her backstage at the Kinetic Playground, and she was there, and Canned Heat was playing. And a couple of days later, there would be a raid at the Kinetic Playground. So there were a lot of cops around. So a few of the members of Canned Heat and Cynthia and I walked across the street. Across the street from the Kinetic Playground was a cemetery.
Okay.
So we went to the cemetery to smoke a joint.
Okay. And so you were just hanging out there with her. And this is now, is this true that somebody recognized you as the guy who sold weed to the Doors after party, or like provided that? Like,
No, it was her earlier in the book. It talks about how the first time I ran into her was at a Doors concert.
Okay.
Before this Canned Heat, when we went to the cemetery, and she was with a friend of mine who ran into me and was looking for weed, and I happened to sell him the weed. I was at the Doors concert selling binoculars.
Okay. Sure.
So the Doors were playing at a place that was called, well, it was originally called the Coliseum, but then they changed the name to have big rock concerts. So the Doors were there, and this friend of mine was there with Cynthia Plastercaster and some other gal, and he was looking for some weed, and we happened to have some weed. You'll read about it in the book, but I had met her the first time at a Doors concert, and I sold her friend some weed.
I think the statute of limitations has probably run out on that one, so I don't think you have to worry about.
I'm not too worried about
any charges
right
being brought to you. And you got to hang out. This is amazing. I just can't believe all this. You got to hang out with Hendrix.
Yeah. This friend of mine, he always had a nice car, and he was going with one of the Chess gals, the daughter of the guys that own Chess Records.
Okay.
Of Leonard Chess. And Leonard Chess's son, Marshall, who went on to, at one time he managed the Stones, but he ran into Daryl was over at their house, and he asked Daryl if he'd like a job driving around Jimi Hendrix. And so Daryl picked up Jimmy at the airport and took him down to Maxwell Street. Got him, because Jimmy heard about this store called Smokey Joe's, and he wanted to get some clothes, so he took him there. And then he brought him, there was a hangout on Howard in California in Chicago called the Gold Coin. And he brought him there, and we all met him.
Was he cool? What was he like to hang out with?
Oh, he was very cool. Yeah, he was very cool. He was really hungry.
Okay.
He was, and coincidentally, when Jimmy came for that show was in August, but the previous May, Cynthia Plastercaster, her first client was Jimi Hendrix.
Wow. So, okay.
And so, and prior to that trip in August, Jimmy visited with Cynthia Plastercaster again, which is just a coincidence.
It's incredible. Again, you just kind of being in these places at the right time. And we've just hit on a fraction of some of these stories, because I know you go on to do other things, having a music store in the 70s in Chicago. And, you know, I'm thinking back, like, tying this all together, you talking about straight out of Skokie, your upbringing in Skokie and kind of going to the neighbors' houses and playing with your friends up there. In terms of the rest of your life and as you look back on it now, how did that upbringing in Skokie shape you and kind of maybe get you into these positions where you have these amazing stories to tell?
Well, the first thing is, you know, at the beginning of the book, I talk about how my family was struggling and I had to work. My father had gotten robbed by a partner of his, and I had no choice. I had to work. So, you know, just working at the ballpark was like going to college, because you know, we were, I didn't work inside the ballpark. I worked outside the ballpark, and the guy eventually opened that store that's on the corner of Clark and Addison, the big souvenir store.
Right.
But back then we used, he had an in with the Chicago police, and they let him set up about six stands outside Wrigley Field. And I worked for him. It was a great job. It taught you how to take inventory, how to make a display, how to do all this stuff. And just all these different, you meet all these characters. Okay. So I was meeting these guys that were, you know, 50 years older than me, and they had stories. And then you meet other stories. And then I start, you know, and I grew up, you know, my grandfather, my dad, took me to the Turkish and Russian baths. So I met all these gangsters and politicians, and, you know, I was just a street kid.
You know,
I was just a street kid. And, that's what was going on.
I mean, you know, there's something to be said about that, I think, because a lot of times today we get caught up in education, and I get it. Education is really important. You know, I'm also a teacher, so I love education, but you want like a real ground level education about life. Do what you did, you know? I mean, go work at these places, learn how to interact with people, learn what ticks people off, learn how people are relating and interacting with each other. That is also an education. And that really comes through in your stories here. That is a very human thing. And I think, you know, we should celebrate that. This is a collection of amazing stories. And really, it's about the human condition, isn't it?
Yes, yes. And it's about relating to people. And it's funny because I was just talking to a consultant of mine, and she told me, she says, you know what, you talk on the phone more than most people. Most people email or text. I said, but we get it done in 3 minutes instead of a half hour with emailing back and forth and trying to interpret what everybody's saying.
Right.
I mean, there's something, you know, the problem, I think one of the, you know, I'm all for education. I read a lot. I go take classes. I'm all for that. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I think the kids growing up today are really at a big disadvantage because they don't know how to communicate with each other. You know, it's a tough thing.
It is a tough thing. I agree with you. We need more face-to-face communication, getting in there, getting into some uncomfortable situations. You know, that'll teach you. That'll teach you when you have adversity. Yeah, how to overcome that and how to navigate a bunch of social situations. I think this is great, the stories that you're telling here. The book, again, is called Straight Outta Skokie, The Crockie Chronicles, 1968. And we can go to this website, straightoutaskokie.com. Al Crockie is the author of this book. And boy, he has lived a life. Lots of stories in here. And look for the other editions coming out in the future. Hey, Al, I really enjoyed our conversation today, man. I really appreciate the time. And thanks for all the stories. Keep doing what you're doing, man.
All right. Thank you. Thank you. It was a privilege to be on your show.
There is so much creativity in Chicago, and the local company Creative Cipher is in the thick of that creativity. Founded by Troy Pryor, this organization aims to tell stories that maybe don't get the kind of spotlight that they deserve, and he's also working on developing a new entertainment ecosystem here in Chicago and beyond. The website is creativecipher.org, and Troy joins us once again here on Outside the Loop. Troy, it's nice to talk to you again. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate that.
You got it. And also with us today is Cindy Beasley. She is the new interim president at Creative Cipher. Cindy, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to be here.
Well, it's great to talk to you both. So, Troy, you and I have chatted on this show before, but remind us about Creative Cipher. Why did you found it, and what are you really setting out to do here?
Thanks. So I launched the organization roughly 10, 11 years ago after having been in the industry as a voice actor and on camera and stage, and just saw the gaps in opportunities. And a lot of times it came from not being a part of the decision-making process. And I built an infrastructure really to support a small group of actors that were looking to create their own content. And from that, it just became a snowball. You know, sometimes you're just trying to solve one problem and it just continues to grow. So the organization grew from a handful of creators just looking to create short films for one another into this entertainment apparatus where we've produced TV, film, live events, radio, podcast, and now expanding into other worlds of entertainment.
Yeah, I think that's so important. And look, you know, we're talking, I think, just generally today about, you know, inclusion and inclusivity and what does that look like? And so you said, hey, look, maybe I'm not seeing representation at the table where decisions are being made. So, hey, maybe make your own table, you know, and try to have conversations and decisions that are really going to include people. So that's kind of what you're thinking about here. And it's not just film. This is just, like I said, kind of an entertainment ecosystem. So you're branching out, you're doing different kinds of entertainment, but you're really trying to get certain perspectives and voices elevated, aren't you?
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of times you'll notice if you're not in a position to green light your projects or green light a story that you want to tell, sometimes those narratives are never created. Sometimes you'll see something that is an amazing piece of art that gets created, but it doesn't have the marketing behind it, which is why we wanted to make sure we weren't just in the content or in the film side of things. We were also tapped into the journalistic, the editorial side of things, the marketing, to make sure that we were as independent as possible.
Cindy, I want to bring you in here because you are the interim president at Creative Cypher. This is a relatively new position for you, I should say. But in terms of what you're going to do here and just thinking about kind of the mission of Creative Cypher and what we've been talking about, what are you looking to do here? What are you looking to accomplish with this new position for you?
Awesome question, Mike. Thanks for that. Honestly, you know, continuing to expand on Troy's vision in a way that's now elevating the company both internally and externally, right? I think the foundation that's been set is more than top tier. It's amazing. So it's definitely big shoes to fill, but it's a space that I can walk into confidently and ready to conquer, you know, whether it's new projects, new partnerships. I'm looking forward to our flagship event next year, XL26. I'm confident to say will be the best and the biggest that we've seen yet. So all of that is to say I'm looking forward to elevating Cypher in a way that not only represents the original vision of inclusivity, but cements the company, the organization, and our community in the entertainment industry in a way that has not been done before.
And then kind of along those lines, what you're talking about here, Cindy, thinking about Chicago, because I know Troy and I have talked about this, Chicago as a place where entertainment can happen. You know, we just tend to think of New York Absolutely. And LA, and sure, like those places are great. And obviously, those are entertainment hubs. But in order to elevate Chicago here, what you're talking about, Cindy, kind of tapping into these sort of pockets of creativity, tell us a little bit more about how you plan to elevate what's going on here in Chicago.
Well, it's funny you ask. I'd swear you were a fly on a wall in the conversation I was having yesterday. But to your point, yes, we don't get the recognition or, you know, the onus that we deserve compared to an LA or New York. But I think one of the places that I'll start may seem small, but it's mighty, is just continuing to expand our social media presence. We live in a world where digital is changing every single day. So there's no, you know, room to refute any of the work that Cypher is doing behind the scenes, at the tables, making these deals. And we're going to continue to do that. And as we do it, we're going to document it along the way so that people are seeing the impact of this in real way. And I don't see how that does not put a spotlight on Chicago by us doing that.
Yeah, to get that social media following, obviously a big importance with that these days. But yeah, also like what you're talking about, the message, I think, is really important too. And Troy, I want to ask you the same question in terms of, elevating what's going on here in Chicago. I mean, boy, we've talked about the talent that's here, the stories that are here. How are you going to think about that sort of big picture in terms of elevating what's going on here in the city?
Well, some of our strategic partners that have already come on board, including some of the distribution partners, are now streaming content coming from a lot of the storytellers right here in our ecosystem. As we've talked about, Chicago has always had talent. We've always exported talent. So one aspect of this is now that we have access to larger distribution models, we can now provide platforms or pipelines for some of these creators and storytellers to get their work seen and in larger places. And some of these showcases are framed as Chicago rising stars. So Chicago is branded in a lot of the content. Some of the content coming out of our lab that we support, we actually ensure that there's scenery and there are landmarks and there are other things about the city that are baked into it. So while we're supporting the process of content creation, we're also being very intentional about some of the messaging and visuals that are in the content for the purposes of promoting the city of Chicago as well. Beyond that, it's also important that we note there have been a lot of folks that have done well that have moved away and have always wanted to come back to Chicago, but needed a vehicle that made sense for them, that didn't feel performative, and it felt like something they could really become a part of. You know, year two of XL Fest, the Tate brothers, Lorenz Tate, LeBron Tate, Lamar Tate, were speakers, and they saw what we were doing. They wanted to invest in their in their home, and they came on board as partners for that festival. Robert Townsend just came through last week, so you've got a groundswell of individuals that have done very well, and they've always wanted to come back. So that's going to play a critical role in all of this as well, because it adds legitimacy to some of the programming things that we've always been doing. But it says a lot when people that don't have to come back to Chicago do.
Right. And they know, you know, what we're about here. I talked to Robert Townsend on this show, and, you know, he was very appreciative of Chicago. He's from here. And his time here, and, you know, he wants to come back even though he lives in L.A. now and kind of get, you know, tapped back into this scene. And so going forward here, I know you've mentioned XL Fest, which we've talked about before. So kind of showcasing some of the work that comes out of the city, but also the process, because as we're talking about here, you know, with Creative Cypher, yeah, you can maybe produce some short films or podcasts or, you know, TV shows, and think about the content and the messages, but there's a lot that goes into that. And that's where what I think is really cool about Creative Cypher. And Cindy, I'll just kind of go to you on this, because you're helping folks along the way. You know, how do you get something produced? How do you get something from a screenplay to the screen? That is kind of how you operate, and you're helping folks navigate that, aren't you?
Absolutely. And I think we're helping folks navigate that, you know, in different ways. To your point, yes, how do we get this film distributed? How do we get this podcast out in the world? But it also starts, and if we're focusing specifically on XL Fest, it's the community and the real tangible opportunity that an event like that we're focusing on brings to people. You know, we could have masterclasses, we could have so many different ways to teach and talk about it. But when you're in that room, it's transactional in the best way. You know, one of the terms that we're using is marketplace. Like XL Festival is a marketplace. You know, there's live transactions happening because the amount of talent, the amount of access, the amount of resources that come together in one space is unmatched. And I think it just drives back the point to what we're talking about and bringing it all full circle. When there are so many people in different arenas, in different regions throughout the country that are seeing what's happening here and putting that spotlight on Chicago, that are committing to bringing the resources back here, as long as we're doing our part to centralize them and to showcase that story, you know, the opportunity is endless for us all.
Yeah, it really is. And Troy, I want to ask you, here we are closing out 2025. We're taking a look ahead at 2026. Oh, boy. So when you look at what Creative Cypher is doing, what are you pretty excited about in 2026?
Oh, man, I'm very excited about our slate. We've got quite a few projects that have been backlogged, and we put a moratorium on new submissions just because of how many things that we are currently vetting. So we're really excited about a handful of film projects that are coming up. Also, a new drive-in movie experience that we'll be launching this spring in Bronzeville is an exciting moment. Our relationship with Columbia College Chicago will continue to grow after this deal with Robert Townsend. We're very, very excited about bringing some more educational opportunities there. So, you know, we're in a good place. And now it's all about focusing on the most impactful elements. We have enough on our slate right now to last us for the next 2-3 years, and you can't do it all. So it's just really going to be important that we really focus on the work that makes the most, that has the most impact.
And Cindy, I'll ask you the same question as you look at 2026 coming up here. What are you excited about for Creative Cypher?
Well, I think Troy took all my favorite things. That drive-in experience is one I'm certainly looking forward to. But outside of that, and just thinking about, you know, the opportunity I have now to grow within and to lead this company to growth, honestly, just continuing to forge bonds and partnerships with current and new partners that continue to provide the access that this company was founded on. You know what I mean? I'm looking forward to continuing to just create more opportunities within and for our community.
Well, telling stories, this is wonderful what you're doing, getting these messages out there, these perspectives, the stories, the opportunities for people to be creative. That's what it's all about. CreativeCypher.org is the website, and I'm sure we'll be connecting in 2026 because so much going on with that locally based company. And Troy Pryor is the founder of Creative Cypher, and Cindy Beasley is the interim president at that organization. Again, CreativeCypher.org is the website. Troy and Cindy, thank you so much for talking to us today.
Thank you, Mike. Deeply appreciate it.
And that'll do it. Outside the Loop show number 1001 is done. Thank you so much for listening to the show today. Thanks to Bob Ferguson for all of his engineering skills in the WGN radio studio. I hope you have a wonderful week. I will talk to you again next time right here on Outside the Loop.